Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. And we're live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators hosting the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. The reigning Stanley Cup champions in the building. Don't drop your cups, but drop your pucks, yeah. And the puck will be dropped at 7 o'clock. Pre-game coverage starting at 6 p.m. on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game. And speaking of the Predators, D-Mace and I were talking about this earlier. Mm-hmm. Predators haven't lost in regulation since February 15th. 17-game point streak, yep. 8-game win streak.
This is true.
Willie, this is a question that we know you're going to hate. It goes against every single bone in Willie Donick's body,
Coach
but
Willie.
I have to ask you, Willie, are the Predators Stanley Cup contenders?
Yes. I think they were like, okay, we like to read the odds sometimes. Jimmy Shapiro's. Our buddy Jimmy will send us odds eventually, right, about the odds. You will not see them among the favorites.
Okay.
But I think they believe that if they play the way they are playing, that they can play with anybody. Like, they are probably going to play the way it is shaping up, one of three teams. And it's hard, and you cannot tell which one it's going to be because it's interchanging. They're all very, very even in the points, and it depends on if Nashville finishes in wild card one or wild card two. Mm-hmm. But it is very likely going to be Vancouver, Dallas, or Colorado. Now, those three are going to be among the teams that people will start listing when you hear the national pundits say, who are the Stanley Cup favorites? You were going to hear Colorado. Mm-hmm. You were going to hear Dallas. And you're going to hear Vancouver. You know, Vancouver, before the season started, would not have been in that category. They've just had a tremendous year under Rick Tocchet. They have been awesome out of the gate, and they have sustained it.
Another Jack Adams candidate.
I would say the favorite for the Jack Adams to win it. I would really be, I shouldn't say really disappointed. I will be disappointed if Andrew Burnett is not a finalist for that.
I would agree.
But yeah. I can't argue with anybody that says Tocchet because they were not supposed to be great, and
They are.
They almost were the first team to clinch last night. They missed their chance. They lost to the Kings last night. So are they contenders? They're going to be among the biggest underdogs, but the gap has constricted a lot. I am really curious where Jimmy Shapiro and all the odds makers have them because the last time the Predators were in the playoffs, when UC Saros got hurt right before they went into the playoffs, and they had to play Colorado, who was an unbelievable machine going in. They were like the biggest underdog in the playoffs for years. Uh-huh. Like nobody had been as big of an underdog, and it was for obvious reasons, and it didn't work out well. This year, I just don't think. Now, let's hope that you can have this caliber of a team, right, or this group of players, right? There are signs saying tonight that Jeremy Lauzon has a chance to come back and play. Like, these are all things that you hope that you have your team. Because crazy stuff happens. Like, that injury to UC Saros right before, that changed everything for that team. They still would have been a big underdog, but having him would have given you a shot. But the way they're going, I think they will believe that they could stack up with anybody that they play.
Just looking at the odds, Predators are plus 4,000 to win the Stanley Cup. But just to kind of put that into perspective, Florida has the best odds at 650, then Colorado, Carolina, Edmonton, Dallas, Boston, New York, Winnipeg, Vegas, Toronto, Vancouver, the Kings, Tampa Bay, and then the Predators.
Wow.
So they're right up there with all of the teams that I think very well could be listed as serious contenders for the Cup.
Vancouver is a little lower than I would have imagined. I think
that's probably because
of where a lot of people think they have overachieved a lot and statistically overachieved too. I wonder what the odds were before the season started. That'd be an interesting thing to compare.
Or even what it was like 2 months ago.
Like those odds are interesting. That still has Nashville kind of on the bottom of the teams that are in. But I feel like in the locker room, they're starting to really believe that if they play the way they've been playing, that they'll have a chance against anybody. They won't look at themselves as this you know, Cinderella or whatever. You know what I mean? I think you want to embrace that outwardly. You want to, be the team that's loose. Like, think about Vancouver. If it's Vancouver, in that city, in that country, no Canadian team has won the Stanley Cup since 1993.
That's crazy.
In Canada now, I mean, we're talking every game is Monday Night Football up there.
Yeah.
Right? If a Canadian team is playing, that's where everybody is looking in that city. They'll be under the microscope, and they will be expected to beat Nashville. It's like we were talking about Tennessee fans, basketball. They don't want to hear about how good Creighton is. They just want to say, it's time to get past the Sweet 16.
Yeah,
I don't care who you're playing. You have to get past the Sweet 16. I think that's kind of the mentality that, and that's where I think you could be in the beneficial position if you're Nashville. It's like, hey, we're not supposed to be here. You guys are the number one seed. We're not supposed to win. Let's be loose. Let's be the underdog. But inwardly, you're going to say, we could stack up with these guys. We've beaten these guys.
And why wouldn't they feel that way? They have beaten some of the best teams in the league.
The only one they haven't beaten is Vancouver. And that was three times early in the season before Nashville became the team that we know them to be now.
Yeah, they're a much different team than what they were, you know, the first half of the season. And, you know, I explained it, Willie, to Caroline this way. You know, I think they've always thought, you know, when you change a new head coach, when you change head coaches, which means you're changing a coaching staff, you got a new GM in. His philosophy is a little bit different from the past GM. The core of it is probably the same, but some things he wants to do is a little bit different. There's going to be sort of this figuring out stage, you know, introductory stage to what Coach Bruno wants to do. And he has to figure his players out. Yeah, he's watched these players from afar. Probably he had a game plan for them. But game planning for them and watching them from afar is nothing like actually being in the locker room with them, knowing their strength, their weaknesses, knowing which line to put them on, how do they sort of react to certain players. He was trying to figure all of this out in the first half of the season, as were the players. Mm-hmm. They finally got the right formula. To me, they're the team right now who they thought they were going to ultimately be at the beginning of the season. It took them a little time to get there. Now they're there. They've proven that this is the type of hockey they're going to continue to play, whether they win or lose. The brand of hockey that they play is a brand which they can win with moving forward, not just today but tomorrow and next year, whatnot. So now they've reached that point, Willie, that, okay, we feel comfortable with what we're doing. We know exactly. You know where you're supposed to be. I know what to expect from you. You know what to expect from me. The coach know what to expect from all of us. So we can't go out on the ice anymore and play half-ass. Mm-hmm. We got to go and do the things that we've been doing over the last month and a half. They figured it out now. They've learned. And now I think you're seeing that the Predator team, barring injury, you're seeing the Predator team that I believe they're going to be in the future, even in the future. I think they're only going to get better moving forward, to me.
And I really hope you're right. I still think if you line up talent-wise, they still – I think what's exciting is what's in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. That can really help even bolster it a little bit more from where they are now. But as far as what you were saying, the leadership and the belief in their formula, like this is how we play. If we do this, I don't care where we're playing. I don't care who we're playing, but we can stack up. This is a great test tonight against the champions. And then you've got Arizona. You know, this is like Andrew Britt has been saying, every game has got the test, right? You have to
Arizona's
stay.
A test in and of itself, right. Even you it's, have if to, it's an underachieving
because you're playing
team.
In a college
it's a
rank.
Mental test.
It's a mental test. And then Colorado at Colorado. Mm-hmm. And Colorado could be your first round opponent. Now, the ultimate test to see if your formula stacks up is when you play Colorado at Colorado. They're 28-6. I watched their game on Sunday. They were down 4-0 against Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. Looked like it was over. It wasn't over. They come flying back. And by the end of the game, Pittsburgh was swimming around going, can we survive? Can we even just get this game to overtime? They barely did, and then they lost right at the beginning of overtime. They can overwhelm you in that building. High altitude. They get the matchups. So I'm really curious to see how their stuff stacks up in that building because that could be your first-round opponent. They will have the home ice advantage. right? So somewhere in there, you got to get a win in Denver. And that's been, there's, you know, you're looking around the league, that's the toughest place to win in the league by definition, 28-6. Mm-hmm.
Okay, here's another question for you, Willie. And this goes for you as well, Caroline. And again, I'm thinking ahead. They get the win tonight, or they get a point. Let's just say they get a point out of this. Would they have 10 games remaining, right?
Right.
When is that point where you say, okay, this is where we are. This is where we are at as a team, standing-wise. Now I need to give some guys some rest because this playoff push is going to be a tough. We need every – we need all sticks on deck.
Right.
You know what I'm
you
saying?
Need
we
depth,
need all hockey
need,
sticks.
You
on,
need players.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when is it – when is the time that Coach – you think Coach Bruno will say, okay, is it the last game, last two games, somewhere around there to give my guys – we already know where we're going to be.
Yeah.
Whether it's the first spot or the second spot. And I said to Caroline, they still got an opportunity to catch Winnipeg, you know?
That's another thing is, you know, how, that might figure into
exactly.
your answer to
uh-huh.
that is, are you creeping up? But look, if you catch Winnipeg, uh-huh. you still play Dallas or Colorado
yeah.
in the first
yeah,
round.
So it really don't matter.
So you're going to get one of these really good teams mm-hmm. who will be on the top of that contender list mm-hmm. in the first round, no matter whether you're wild card one, wild card two, or you sneak into third place.
Yes.
That's a great question. The one thing that I would look at in the two wild card spots is the travel. Mm-hmm. If you're traveling to Vancouver and then you have to, let's say your second round opponent is L.A. or Edmonton, uh-huh. that's a lot of miles in the air. And so if there is a way to, if you're splitting hairs,
uh-huh.
maybe you'd rather be in the central bracket. But hey,
they're all going to be good teams.
They're yeah. all going to be good teams.
But you're talking
but
about from a travel
yeah. and a wear and tear, yo-yoing uh-huh. back and forth. Mm-hmm. There was a year, the year before they went to the finals mm-hmm. in 2017, they made the playoffs in 2016. They beat Anaheim in a tough first round series. Mm-hmm. It went seven. So that's three trips to Anaheim. They won three games out of four mm-hmm. against the Ducks out there. Won the seventh game. They had never won a seventh game. Their next opponent was San Jose, who ended up going all the way to the final, and they lost in seven games to San Jose. But that's a lot of trips from Nashville to California, back and forth. And they could not win in San Jose. They lost all four of the games out there. Now, San Jose had to travel to Nashville, but San Jose's first round, because that's the bracket out there, mm-hmm. they didn't have to travel in that first round, right? They were playing, I think, L.A. or somebody like that. A little less wear and tear. So that's one thing to think about. But your question, the mm-hmm. Coach Willie cringing question of are you contenders, I think you can make the case that anybody who makes the playoffs mm-hmm. is a contender. You're
well,
a contender.
To a certain
you
extent.
Would agree. Like, would you have thought the Florida Panthers were a contender?
Yeah.
Last year.
And
last year?
Oh, excuse me. No, I did not. And then they beat Boston in the first round, and I thought, goodness gracious. But also the Predators in 2022, when they barely snuck into the playoffs and got swept by Colorado.
They were not a contender.
They were not a
no,
contender.
No. And for obvious reasons. When Saros was out, that ended that.
Yeah.
And they still would have been a huge underdog with Saros. Mm-hmm. I would contend if Saros didn't get hurt, they would have played Calgary. That would have been a way different matchup. They would have had a much better chance of pulling that one off. On the flip side, too, all of these, quote, contenders, let's just say it is Dallas and Winnipeg mm-hmm. in the first round. Those are two Stanley Cup contenders. Mm-hmm. One of them's out in the first round.
Yeah.
And all summer, you guys can't get by the first round. You guys can't. Why can't you get past the first round? Well, they played another Stanley Cup contender. It is part of the journey. It is so hard to win that first round. Vegas. Right, they did all of these magical things with the salary cap. They added all these guys, and they will be likely a wild card. Maybe they sneak into second, mm-hmm. or maybe they sneak into third in the Pacific. Mm-hmm. So who are they going to play? Edmonton in the first round, or Vancouver mm-hmm. in the first round, or Dallas in the first round. They have a bear of a first-round opponent. And you think these teams are sitting there going, oh, wow, Vegas, they're sitting there in the wild card. Are we going to play them in the first round? That's the defending champions right there. You got to play them in the first
round. And they get how many players back in the playoffs?
Well,
miraculously, thanks to long-term IR.
We will see. We will see. They have some Mr. Miyagi's over there. That
sure they're nursing some injuries right up until the night
before
the playoffs.
They get Mr. Miyagi. They get them healed up.
Oh, you're miraculously healed.
You're okay. You're okay to go. Couldn't play in game 82. Ready to go in game 83.
That's all that matters.
I think they are, because I think they're playing like one, because they're beating Stanley Cup contenders. And this was the point I made to D-Maze earlier. They're beating good teams, and it's not by a fluky, weird goal or a weird call here and there, and you just squeaked by against a Colorado or a Dallas. No, no, no. Like, you are beating teams handedly, winning at Florida in their building 3-0. Like, that is... that's not fluky stuff. And when you beat good teams, that means you are a good team. And I think if you're beating Stanley Cup contenders, the way that this team is playing and as consistently as they've been playing, as well as they've been playing, how much offense they're creating, as good of goaltenders, as good of goaltending as they are getting, why wouldn't you call them a Stanley Cup contender? And that's not to say that they're going to win the Stanley Cup. That just means that they can make things uncomfortable and make things very interesting for whoever they play in the first round of the playoffs.
I would agree with that. And it's all, once you get out of the first round, that's when it really opens up and really anything can happen. The other thing, the thing I would say, too, is the playoffs are different. Right, you can sit there and say, "Well, we beat this team three times in the regular season."
It almost feels like a different game entirely.
It is different in the playoffs. D-Mace, would you say in all of your NFL playoff games that the playoffs were different?
Oh, definitely. The playoffs are much. The mentality, I think you know, throughout the week, it's the same because you always want to prepare the same way. If you have to change your preparations, that means you didn't have good preparation habits. So if you have good preparation habits, you don't change anything you do throughout the week. But the actual game, the ramifications, it is different. It feels when you step out on that field during the playoffs, it feels different. Like the minute you walk into that building, everything feels different. Your preparation is no different. But once you walk into that building on a Saturday or a Sunday, whenever you play in the playoffs, that does feel different.
Yeah.
The minute you get out your car.
Now, for this Nashville team, remember it was billed as a young team. Let's see where the young guys take us and everything. But if you look at their lineup now, they have, especially with the additions of Zucker and Beauvillier, they do have a lineup that has a lot of playoff experience. If you look at, this is why they got them, right? The quote, the serial winners, Ryan O'Reilly, Cup, Luke Shen, Cups, Ryan McDonough, Cups, Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, a gazillion playoff games for this franchise. Beauvillier, deep runs in the playoffs under Barry Trotz. Jason Zucker, same. They've played a lot of playoff games. So that, I think, gives them another way of belief that we've been through this. Mm-hmm. We'll show you the way. The young guys that are going to get in there, they will have the support of the veterans. That's how they designed it. That's, again, why Barry Trotz has done a brilliant job with his vision of what he hoped this team could be.
Want to get some of your thoughts on the Predators. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Jim in Nolensville is on the line with a question on the Predators. What's up, Jim?
Yeah, I wanted to see, Willie, what you thought of Parsimon. It seemed like he was promising last year, and then this year it seemed like his compete level was kind of declining. How did he do when he went down to Milwaukee? And what do you think of his future?
Well, it's a great question, by the way, because I think Barry Trotz, part of this whole thing is, okay, this is where we're going right now, and let's help these guys. Let's bring in Zucker. Let's bring in Beauvillier. But he can't forget about Parsonen and Glass and Tomasino and all of these guys that, you know, you gave a chance to, right? These are still guys that you want
a part of the future.
Down the road, yes, you need those guys. So what's happened in Milwaukee is interesting. They won 19 in a row. Everybody's like, oh, Milwaukee, 19 in a row, this is amazing. I think they're 1-7, or you know, they've struggled a lot since then. But why? Well, Nashville's taken a few of their defensemen. Yeah. They got a couple other defensemen that are hurt. Askarov has cooled off a little bit, and all of a sudden, it's not going great. But I do think Parsonen has Svechkov is also hurt, another one of their top prospects that I think is part of the future too. I think Parsonen would, let's just say you have the dream, uh-huh. right? You get into the playoffs and it's deep in the series. You get past the first round. And, hey, look, in 2 weeks you could lose a couple forwards and all of a sudden you're calling up guys like Parsonen or Tomasino. This might be a good thing, though, for Parsonen, right, to go down, get the confidence back. He's had some big games. He was a big part of the 19-game winning streak for uh-huh. sure. So he's played well down there. He's still really young. So I don't think it's the last time we're hearing from Parsonen. Same thing with Tomasino and some of the other guys that we haven't seen in Nashville yet. But I think that's what Barry Trotz has to keep his eye on. One eye on the team, one eye on where am I in the big picture.
And those are interesting off-season discussions as well.
Oh, no question.
I think we're at the point where you just rock with what's working.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Of course you want to balance the right now and the future, but right now the focus is right now. You're making the playoffs. You're trying to make a run here. In the off-season, it's now the delicate balance of, okay, what do we want to be next year? Because this team, this is not a young team. Like you said, you have a lot of experience. You've got guys that have been around in the league for several years on this team. Next season, what's the focus? Do you want to get younger next season? Do you want to just run it back with a lot of these veterans?
You have options. You have the flexibility in the cap to do it as well.
Yeah.
Right? They could go out and go get a big free agent. They have the money.
Yeah, Robbie and Joe were talking Mitch Marner this morning.
Now, that's big, big fish right there. Now, that's – I don't know if – I cannot imagine that he hits the market, but you could go shopping for some expensive free – or for one. Probably you don't need five, but you could pull your resources and say, let's go get one big guy that could help us. You have that option. You have the option, like you said, of let's keep with the big picture. Let's let the young guys come in. And then you got a guy like Zucker. Like Zucker, who knows Andrew Brunette well, knows the system. He looks like he's a good fit. He's a rental, but maybe you like him. Maybe you want to keep him for the right price next year. These are all ways you can go. It's just like with the UC Saros thing. Which way do you want to go? You want to re-sign him? Yeah, I do. But if he's asking for too much, I could look the other way and say, well, we got Askarov, we got Lankin. You know, there's options.
And that conversation just got much more interesting than maybe the conversations we were having about a month ago.
And what would really be interesting? If Saros goes on a postseason run, which we could see goalies do, all of a sudden, that ups his
price
stock.
Goes up.
But that also makes you want to say, we got to keep him.
Yeah.
He just took us to the whatever, you know?
Just won the Stanley Cup with him.
Right. Exactly. You can say it, Willie.
We can dream.
You can say it,
we can dream. We can dream.
He just won us
cup.
The Stanley
Carolina.
Cup.
Carolina
cup.
Remembers the
cup.
2019 Blues, right? Were they a cup contender?
No, they were
not. They were last place in the league in January, but by the end of the year, they were playing great, and then they just mowed everybody down. And the next thing you know, they're singing Gloria throughout the streets, and they got the rings.
It's a fun
summer. They got the cup. Yeah.
I always caution anyone who brings up that team, though, because that 2019 Blues team, that is the exception and not the rule. I mean, Binnington was a fine goaltender. They got super, super hot. Like, give me Saros over Binnington any day of the week and twice on Sundays. But I always try to caution. I know it happened. I know it could happen again. But that was a Cinderella. Like, that was a fairy tale. That doesn't happen every single year.
But some would say that the Predators in 2017 had a little bit of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Last year's Panthers team had a little bit of that. There are more Cinderellas in the NHL playoffs, I think, than
it is March.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. March is for Cinderella's.
Yep.
All right, 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get into your thoughts on that. But coming up next, Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, will join us. I want to get Tim's thoughts on the Legarius Sneed trade, and we'll do that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays for broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, which today is Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena because the Predators take on the Vegas Golden Knights tonight at 7 p.m. And that music can only mean one thing. That means Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and Ensworth head football coach, joins us now. Tim, appreciate you for joining us. The Titans trade a 2025 third and swap seventh round picks with the Kansas City Chiefs for L'Jarius Sneed. Are you surprised by the trade compensation, and why was the asking price so low, in your opinion?
I am surprised. I think when we talked last week, you know, when I was maybe trying to forecast it, I had it, I think, at a richer price tag. That's a good thing for the Titans. And, you know, my guess is, you know, the Titans, you know, had to sign him to a big contract, right? I mean, like, that's the, you know, the presumption on it. And so, and I think that probably a general feeling that Kansas City knew that they weren't going to extend him or be able to get him under contract. And so with that, you know, the tag was really only used in order to be able to get something of value rather than letting him walk in free agency and ended up with some type of compensatory pick. So I think it's a good thing for the Titans. I think they've added a really good player. And I think Kansas City, maybe just with the situation they were in with Chris Jones and L'Jarius Sneed, you know, felt like that was the best, you know, thing to do, considering you had two really good players that were due contracts.
And if I'm the Chiefs, I could look at it like, I got Patrick Mahomes and Chris Jones and Travis Kelce. As long as I've got those three players, you know, traded away Tyreek Hill, still won a Super Bowl, so that could be mm-hmm. Kansas City's mentality. But just how good is L'Jarius Sneed? How much of a difference maker can he be for this Titans defense?
Yeah, I think he's a really good player. I think he's, you know, when you think about matchups, it's a matchup league. He's a guy that matches up well with, you know, an opposing team's, you know, star receiver. I think he's also a guy that has good zone skills as well as good man skills. And so, look, you know, playing defensive back in the National Football League is hard. You know, the rules are set up so that offenses have success. You know, you can only tackle guys a certain way. It's a difficult position to play, and it's hard to play it at a high level for a long period of time. And so, you know, what I guess the big thing would be to say, did the Titans get better in the secondary with this trade? And I think you can absolutely say yes. And so I think that, what does he bring? I mean, he brings, you know, more experience and probably better play and ability and confidence to the secondary, which I think is probably wanted and needed with some recent departures, as well as, you know, guys that have been drafted that just really haven't worked out.
We'll talk with Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst and head football coach at the Innsworth Tigers, with the Innsworth Tigers. Now, Tim, are you, because it seemed like, you know, when this whole thing first started with L'Jarius Sneed, there was no sort of red flags. It was just, okay, are they going to tag him or are they going to tag Chris Jones? Who are they going to tag first? Well, obviously, they tag L'Jarius Sneed, signed Chris they signed a big defensive tackle, Chris Jones. But then all of a sudden you started to hear, well, he didn't practice much because of injury. They didn't say he missed a bunch of games. It just started coming out, well, he hadn't practiced much. Are you concerned about that, or would you be concerned about that moving forward? Because to me, it wasn't a problem when you tagged him. It wasn't a problem last year, but all of a sudden now yeah. This is starting to leak out that, oh, he didn't practice. I can tell you there's probably half of the NFL that didn't practice for one reason or another, and a lot of it had to do with probably nagging injuries throughout the season.
Yeah, I think that this is how this typically works. When you're going to guarantee that type of money, when you're going to make a significant trade, you're going to gather as much information as you can. And part, like, I'll just give you a good example. I remember when Anquan Boldin was headed to free agency, and I don't even remember what team I was. Actually, I don't even think I was on a team anymore. I think I was in TV. In fact, I know I was. I was in TV, and I got a phone call from a team that was interested in signing Anquan Boldin as he was leaving Arizona. So somebody called me and said, hey, from my former team, one of my former teams, like, tell me about it, like him practicing and stuff. And people remember Anquan, he was a really tough player. Like, he, you know, played with a broken jaw. He played with, you know, a broken foot. He had a dislocated toe one time, and they had to, you know, hide his pads in the locker room because he wanted to play, and you know, the team didn't want him to because they thought he would re-injure himself. And so, you know, he didn't practice a lot because he was really banged up. But it wasn't because he didn't want to practice. I say all that to say that, like, you better be gathering that information. Mm-hmm. And I would think that in today's world with, you know, the experience that Rand has, the resources that you have to find out a player's practice habits, a player's health, all of that stuff is going to get checked out prior to, you know, a trade of any type of magnitude being made. So, excuse me, in terms of like things coming out after the fact, look, sometimes it is just trying to appease the fan base in Kansas City that maybe is unhappy with the fact that they lost a good player. They didn't love the draft compensation. Truthfully, I think that if you're sitting here as a Tennessee Titans fan, I think you should be happy about the trade. You should not be worried about the practice participation in LeGarius Sneed.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of thinking, Tim. I looked at it from the standpoint, you know how many guys either are held out during the week or possibly can practice, but the coach say, hey, listen, sit back, you know, and take a few days off. As long as you can practice Thursday and Friday, we're good. That happens more times than not in the NFL, especially now with so much money involved. I'm not too concerned about it, but I know when you're paying that much money, you want to make sure you cross every T and dot every I, so I can understand from that standpoint. Another thing I want to ask you about, Tim, is the new rule, the new kickoff rule. Mm-hmm. And we will talk about this as a whole on the show afterwards, but are you in favor of this new rule, and why implement this rule when, you know, it seems like, you know, concussions and everything else has dropped in regards to kickoff return. You're still going to have it because it's a high impact play, but to change it that drastically, it does. I'm not going to say it sort of takes away, but it does change as far as you scheming and game planning for your particular kickoff and kickoff return.
Yeah, I think it's a massive change. It's a huge rule change. Mm-hmm. I will say this, you know, I think we sometimes, you know, argue against the National Football League and like, do you really care about player safety? You're adding more regular season games. Do you really care about it? You know, like that type of stuff. This 100% is a player safety, mm-hmm. longevity of the game decision. The NFL studied it. They know that kickoff and kickoff return, you know, the kickoff play in general is, you know, leads to more concussions disproportionately than any other play in the game. And that's why, if you just think about the changes, like shoot, go back to when my dad played, you used to be able to cut on kickoff return, got rid of that. Then, you know, you had wedges, they got rid of the wedges. Then they got rid of, you know, the running starts from 10 yards deep for the kickoff team. They've, you know, adjusted where the ball goes on a touchback. There have been kind of little modifications along the way because the NFL knows that it's a really dangerous play and there are a lot of guys getting hurt and a lot of guys getting hurt with head injuries. And so this to me was, you know what, like let's stop inching to that point and let's just go ahead and rip the Band-Aid off and say we're making this change in the name of player safety because we need to do it. There's disproportionate in terms of head injuries on this play. And so, look, that's what they're doing. I'm not going to be critical of the NFL when it's in the name of player safety and it's actually in the name of player safety. I'll be critical when you're like, hey, player safety, but let's play a few more games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that I'm okay with it in that regard. And then I would say you're right about it's going to change the way we coach the game. The game is played. It's going to change who makes rosters because of the different skill set in terms of covering a kick in that regard. The value of a guy that can kick touchbacks, if that's in fact what you want him to do, since the ball will be placed on the 30. I think there are a lot of factors to this that are going to impact the game. It's going to take it adjusting and getting used to. But I think ultimately less guys will get hurt and will have less head injuries. And that's what the NFL wants, and I think it's – I don't know. I don't think that we should be critical of them for that.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, talking NFL. So, Tim, the other one that I think we're all still trying to envision what impact this is going to be on the game. But I can certainly understand the outcry of defensive players saying, okay, you got all these rules that are making it easier for the offense, and now you've got this hip toss, whatever they call this thing, where you can't drag the guy down. I've seen it happen a few times. Like, you know it when you see it, and everybody cringes. You can see guys getting the high ankle sprain. They're getting pulled down from behind awkwardly. And I don't want to see that. But at the same time, as a defender, I'm trying to figure out the technique change that you will have to make and the impact it's going to have. Because I can see a defender going, well, I've got to get the guy down on the ground. I mean, this is the only way I can do it. I'm not grabbing him by the face mask. I'm not taking his knees out. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, I think it's a hard one. I mean, to me, this feels like, you know, it's like this big extension of the horse collar tackle. And look, the horse collar tackle, you know, you can see it. It's like directly behind. But this hip drop tackle that you're referring to, sometimes it's on the side. Sometimes, you know, contact is originally be made, you know, head to head. There are a number of plays where, yes, it is the defender coming from behind. But from a coaching perspective, I don't know what you do. I mean, if you're coming from behind, you have to, you know, kind of just go for the guy's, you know, go for the guy's legs to try to trip him up. I think this one's going to be a really difficult one to coach, to, you know, guys out of it. Because, you know, when we talk about, like, hey, you can't hit a guy, a defenseless receiver, high as he's coming across the middle, like, you could say, all right, well, the guy, he needs to take, you know, change, like, his target area of where he wants to hit that receiver that's coming across the middle. I'm not saying it won't take some adjusting, but you at least know what the coaching point can be. I'm not really sure what the coaching point is in terms of, like, you're trying to tackle somebody. Like, you're behind him. You can't horse collar tackle. You've got to get them to the ground, and we're talking about big physical elite athletes that, you know, you like, it's not easy to get to the ground. So this one, I understand the outcry from defensive players. I'm curious to see what the coaching technique is in regards to, like how do you actually get a player down as you're approaching him as a defender from behind in some of these situations.
Yeah. Especially if you're the slower guy.
You lightly touch him and you say, get down, please.
Yeah, if you're the slower guy and you're trying to catch the guy from behind, I mean, it's you're desperate. It's either that or score the touchdown. So you have to do what you have to do. So then you can't be thinking about, well, what's my technique here and how to – let's avoid the hip drop. And, like, dude, nobody thinks that way, right?
I don't even think the coaches know how to coach that. A lot of times there's contact, and then you're just wrestling the guy down.
Yeah.
Right? And so, you know, I think there's an element of this where I think guys have been tackling that way for years. Mm-hmm. And if you would have asked them, like, what's your technique here? You know, they'd be like, well, listen, after I hit him and he didn't go down, I wrapped him up and just did everything I could to wrestle him to the ground.
And this is just the guy's, like, still trying to run. He's still trying to gain yards, right? Yeah. He's got 1 yard to get to the sticks. It's 3rd and 9. You got to get him down. That's tough.
Just jump on his back. That's all. Just jump on his back and hopefully he'll fall. You know, he may take you on a ride for about 3 yards.
No, stop.
Because you can't knock him forward, right? Because if you're knocking him forward, he's going to make the sticks, right? You almost have to concede the first down. So you. Part of the reason it happens, right, you're pulling him back so he can't stretch out and get to the chains.
You're trying to stop the guy's momentum. There's no question about it. And I think that, you know, it's like, you know, if you're chasing somebody from behind, like, you don't push him in the back to get him to fall forward, right? Like, it's the same general concept. And a lot of times you'll see defensive backs run behind somebody and swing at their leg to basically get them to trip themselves, like if they're trying to catch somebody. But those are all very different tackles than, hey, listen, I'm catching somebody from behind, I'm jumping on his back, and I'm trying to wrestle him to the ground.
It's what we would call a conundrum for a defensive player, or a quandary.
I feel for defensive players.
You're in a quandary. What do you do?
I don't know what you do. I mean.
Play offense. Tell your coach, I'm not playing defense.
Yeah.
I'm playing offense.
Hey, score more points.
Tim, how are you going to coach your players?
How are you going to coach
your high school players? Who's going to be the practice dummy? to get.
I mean, this is an interesting. I have actually was thinking about the kickoff rule, you know, and as that relates, because, you know, one of the things we do see is that, you know, like there's some trickle up stuff in football, you know, from high school to college, college to the pros. And there's obviously trickle down things as well in terms of rules and player safety. And you just think about something like the guardian caps, right? Like no one wanted to wear guardian caps, and then the NFL is wearing them. And, you know, you go around high school, there are some teams that play games in guardian caps. And so, look, I think one of the things that I think it's important for coaches of all levels, and I certainly fit into this now. Look, I'm going to be eager to see the way that people coach it, you know, especially at the pro level, which where we'll see it, and no differently than the kickoff. It's why, you know, the way Pete Carroll had been coaching tackling in Seattle, and, you know, the NFL puts together a USA Football, you know, video of this is, you know, how the Seattle Seahawks tackle. It should be good enough for, you know, you to tackle this way at your high school program or your college program. And so people are studying it, trying to learn it. And yeah, that'll be no different for me or a bunch of other guys that are coaching high school football or college football, is to see what the reaction to this in the NFL is, how it's coached, and, you know, if you can implement that at the level where you're coaching.
Last one for you, Tim, quickly. It feels like we can say the first wave of free agency is behind us. Of course, we still have the draft and the next few waves of free agency. But now that this first wave is behind us, what's kind of the national perception of the additions that the Titans made in free agency?
Yeah, I think it's good. I think nationally, what's had everyone's attention is it feels like the Cowboys have done nothing, right? Like that's what's grabbing everyone's attention.
Classic.
And then And I think people feel like, yeah, like the Titans have done good things. I think the big thing in terms of the challenge of what the perception is you look at the AFC, it's loaded with quarterbacks, it's loaded with good football teams. And so, you know, like whether it is, you know, adding star defensive players or guys on the offensive side of the ball, ultimately I think that everyone's going to still be in a wait and see in terms of how the quarterback plays. I think it is that simple, right? Like Tony Pollard, great. Jarius Sneed, great. You know, but what's your quarterback going to do? And look, I think that's fair, especially when you play in a division that's got C.J. Stroud and Trevor Lawrence, and Anthony Richardson for that matter. We're still waiting to see on, and when you have a conference with Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson and Joe Burrow and players like that.
It's a quarterback league. Yep. It's totally fair. I don't think Kansas City's shaking in their boots about who's playing corner because they know who's playing quarterback.
Exactly.
Tim, you are the very best. Appreciate your time, and thanks for joining us, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Great. Thanks, guys. See you.
Yep.
All right, appreciate it. Tim Hasselbeck, appreciate him for stopping by. We'll react to what Tim had to say there coming up next, plus your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace. And hey, score big this spring with Lee Company and the Nashville Predators in the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Enter for a chance to win a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. That's right, a Kohler home generator or $10,000 toward Lee Company Home Services. Go online to leecompany.com/giveaway to enter. That's leecompany.com/giveaway in the 10K Power Play Giveaway. Contest entries are accepted until Saturday, April 20th. Lee Company, all you need. Caroline, Willie, Dean Mays for live out here at Barrel House at Bridgestone Arena. Predators in action against the Vegas Golden Knights tonight. And I'm glad that you brought up the rule changes with Tim.
Yeah.
Because I want to get into the kickoffs with you here in a second, Dean Mays, okay. Because I don't think there's anybody better to comment on the kickoff changes than you are. But as far as the hip drop tackle is concerned, like Skylar Texan, phone lines driven by Wilson County Honda.com, says, how do you chase another football player to tackle him without doing a hip drop tackle? And at some point, are guys just going to let them run away when they run past guys? Like I understand wanting to make the game safer, but also to a certain extent, like, how do you play football?
I don't know how you because it, you know, at previous changes, there's always been sort of a, like, an example. Like, okay, this is how you do this. Or if you don't want to go for the head, this is how. This is what targeting looks like. Mm-hmm. We can, there's a clear distinct between tackling, you know, at a guy and your head up and targeting. Targeting, usually you can tell targeting mm-hmm. when you see it. So you can kind of coach your guys out of targeting. I don't know how you coach your guys out of this particular tackle. It's not like guys are running toward the ball carrier and saying, oh, man, I don't want to hip tackle him, so I got to kind of torque my body like this mm-hmm. or, you know, make sure I'm in this position. No, it's, hey, I'm just trying to get the tackle on the ground. I'm not trying to hurt him, but just think, Derrick Henry at 240. Let's just say Ladarius Sneed at 180. And you're talking about him coming. Yeah. How do you tackle Derrick Henry, you know, at an angle? Or how do you tackle if you're running from behind him? Do you try to just punch at the ball?
Because more than likely you are running from behind him.
Do you try to punch at the ball and try to slow him down so somebody else? But typically what you see is guys punching at the ball, and then they grab with their left hand, and they punch with the right hand. Mm-hmm. And sometimes as you're trying to bring him down, it may cause you to sort of hip drop. That's not what you want to do, but we're taught to get the ball from the player, but make sure you also can tackle him as well. So if I'm running up from behind, I'm putting my left hand over him, and I'm trying to punch the ball out with my right hand. It's going to cause me, in a sense, to hip drop, because mm-hmm. if I don't get the ball, I'm trying to grab him and bring him down. I don't know how you coach out of that. Now, they're going to come up with many ways. And those ways ain't going to look no different from what they've been teaching how to tackle the last 20 years. It's not. But now they're going to put an emphasis on no hip drops. It's not like, again, the injury, the lower body injuries have not gone up. So why implement this rule?
That's what I wonder. What was the data? I'm sure it's out there.
But it hasn't. But it
and
hasn't.
I, and
gone
I can
up.
Think of anecdotally some examples uh-huh. of a guy gets hip dropped and he twists his ankle or twists his knee uh-huh. or whatever. So I'm sure that's why. I remember vividly when they put the horse collar in. It was when you were playing. Uh-huh. Who was the kid from
Calico? Tyrone Calico.
Tyrone Calico.
And it was Roy Williams.
Roy Williams from the Cowboys.
Uh-huh.
Grabbed him. And
but that was a deliberate. That was like deliberate. He grabbed the back of his.
And that's where I was going. Like that one, you could see if you could grab a guy in uh-huh. that area, the horse collar, that was an easy way to get a guy down. You can really rip him back.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And, you know, that's. That's dangerous.
Yeah, that. That
here,
yeah.
I it is dangerous, but it's not intentional. There's nobody intentionally trying to injure somebody when you tackle him like that. I don't think.
No, it's I'm grabbing his waist and I'm trying to get him.
Except
down.
For maybe an isolated situation. You've got a guy that's just getting carried away. There's always that, but the technique itself is just I've got to get the guy down, right?
And it almost
trying
feels
to keep
like
the guy from getting a first down or a touchdown.
It feels like to me, could you look at it differently? That not every single hip drop tackle is a 15-yard penalty.
No.
That it's a
case-by-case
basis. But also, I don't think the NFL wants to open themselves up to interpretation. I think the NFL wants it to be black and white, allowed, not allowed. Yes, you can do this. No, you can't do this. I think they want to eliminate the gray areas. How many times do we complain about targeting calls?
Yeah.
More specifically at the college football level. Every time targeting is called, it's like, there we go again on the carousel of targeting. And I don't think the NFL wants to get themselves to that point. But it does seem this reminds me of the turf conversation.
Wow.
Where it's like every injury that happened on turf, it was like, well, there's that pesky turf again. And it's like, was it the turf or did he get concussed because he got drilled in the head? And it really had nothing to do with the turf. I look at the hip drop tackle similarly of, yes, there were instances, unfortunate instances, in which players tore ACLs, had knee injuries, leg injuries from a hip drop tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But is it like a square and rectangle situation where not every hip drop tackle
exactly.
is dangerous, but some of them can be?
Yes, but my thing is have you had more of these tackles that have caused injury thus far? Did you have more last year than
and the ones that do cause injury are
exactly.
going to be the ones that are in the front of your mind because
exactly.
you think about the injuries and not the hip drop tackles that happen several times in
exactly.
a game that
there
don't result
have been,
in injury.
There could have been 15 hip drop tackles in a game, but then one caused a ankle sprain or a high ankle sprain.
Mm-hmm.
So how many hip toss tackles that resulted in injury did you have, NFL? so much so that you had to change the rule. I know, and I understand you just want to be proactive. Yeah. I get it. You want to be proactive. But you got to be proactive from a standpoint of, okay, we're going to be proactive, but we have a solution. Like, what is your solution? How do you – so who is demonstrating? Are refs demonstrating how to tackle? Hell no, because they ain't never tackle. Well, Terry Killens has, but most of them ain't never tackle. So how can you tell me what is legal and what isn't?
Well, they already do, to be fair.
But no. I'm saying some things are black and white. Some things you know. Like targeting, I don't have to play. I know that it's targeting. Mm-hmm. Hip drop, what is deemed a hip drop and what is deemed not?
And I think that the NFL should work with coaches of like, look, this is what the transition is going to be. This is what we want to emphasize. Is that going to be the case? Frankly, I don't know. I'm all for making the game safer, but it's just, how do you enforce it? Yeah. You know, how do you enforce it? 615-737-1025 is the phone number. So speaking of defensive coordinators, I mean, Denard Wilson's going to have to work through this, as 31 other defensive coordinators in the National Football League will have to as well. But, I mean, speaking of Denard Wilson, he's got a riches of DBs to work with now that the Titans have traded for L'Jarius Sneed and, of course, picking up Jadobe Awuzie in free agency. What about the rest of the defense? We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.